ser ético, isto é uma crença.
É uma religião muito grande.
A visão é um culto. É coragem, que é liberdade, que é crer, que é vontade, que é o caráter das pessoas.
Calma de quem é grande, maior que os maiores.
É uma paixão com outra explicação.
Eu não consigo explicar o que é ser do Benfica. Eu sinto o que é ser do Benfica.
Mas de facto uma paixão. E as paixões são assim, vivem-se assim intensamente.
Aqui não há nenhuma razão. É paixão, paixão, paixão.
Ser Benfica.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the Talking to the Doll Benfica podcast, episode 318. Before we get into what we have on tap for you tonight, let me introduce my partners here. Today we got one more. We'll introduce them shortly. But first and foremost, Mr. Cristiano Oliveira.
What's going on, everybody?
Lawyer to the stars. And up in the Great White North, Dave de Oliveira, no relation, but definitely a lot prettier.
Oh, thank you. But good to be back after what was a boring international break. We had our seleção to our Portuguese national team to watch play.
Nem digas nada, pá. Nem digas nada.
We had to watch some Rui Vitória-style soccer being played, so it's good to be back on discussing Benfica and no more international breaks before the that's it. So we're in the final stretch of the season and big title race. So good to be back on tonight.
Yeah. Also making an appearance here, first ever, it's Bruno Barros. Bruno, how are you?
I'm fantastic and glad to be here. Thank you for having me, guys.
Yeah, so Bruno is local here to New Jersey to us. And we have recently... I've met Bruno and gotten to know Bruno, and Bruno does a lot of good work with video and movies, is in the movie production business. And I'll let you tell everyone, introduce yourself and tell everyone why you're a Benfiquista.
Yeah, I mean, Benfiquista since before birth, I would say. maybe in a previous life, I think I was also a Benfiquista, and I think in a future life, I'll still be a Benfiquista.
That's right.
And I made a little docu-series that I posted up on YouTube recently, and that's how we got in touch.
Yeah, so before we go, remind me for you to put the link out there so people could go and check that out.
Absolutely.
We had a chance to preview it, and very, very well done. And I think that some people, I think if not all, will recognize some of the people that you've interviewed. So we'll speak a little bit more about that. On tonight's podcast, we will recap the Tondela game, which happened this past weekend. We'll also look ahead to Sporting, the second leg of the Portuguese Cup that happens Wednesday, tomorrow, as we record this. And also, we will travel up north to play to Santa Maria da Feira to play Feirense. Last Lanterna Vermelha, last place Feirense, is the game that we got coming up this Sunday. So without further ado, but before we get going, I just want to mention something real quick, and I don't want to forget, and I want to make sure that I mention. Our friends over at Benfica FM, they had the honor and the pleasure of having Mr. Shell on this show this week. They recorded it yesterday. So if you haven't checked that out, definitely check that out. It's available on YouTube, Spotify, and everywhere else you can find podcasts. I definitely recommend that. As you know, Mr. Shell is like Mr. Mística, Mr. Benfiquismo, and is also a class act. So definitely check out their show, Benfica FM. And those guys, as you know, are good friends of ours, and we support them. So let's get right into this Tondela game. I'll give you the lineup to start. Vlaco Dimas was in goal. André Almeida, Dias, Ferro, and Grimaldo across the back. Gabriel and Samaris in the middle. Pizzi and Rafa on the wings. João Félix and Jonas were up front. So with Severovic not being available, this is obviously the strongest lineup right now. Jardel also wasn't healthy. I believe that he made the call-up sheet for the Sporting game, but still Ferro deputizing. Good 25 minutes from Benfica. I think after that, the team felt a little anxious, a little nervous. And I think they started rushing things as time went by. Cristiano, let me ask you this. Do you think at this point that Benfica plays after Porto and they go into a game with the pressure of having to win, do you think that there's a certain level of anxiety that the team will feel if they don't get it on the scoreboard early?
Yeah, 100%. And as I stated to a couple of people I was watching the game with each passing minute, you could feel the anxiety, growing, and you could feel the nervousness around the stadium from the fans. And we'll get to that a little bit later, talking about the fans, but from the fans to the players. Then you add in all the dubious refereeing involving both games, whether it's Benfica or Porto playing. It's just so much going on right now in the world of football in Portugal that I think everyone is on the edge of their seat, and that includes players and coaching staff and anyone on the bench. And it's just been a very hectic time right now in Portugal.
Yeah, Dave, what was your feeling after that first half ended?
Not even the first half. Going into this match, I put myself through the misery of watching Porto Braga and watching the inconsistencies of the refereeing in Portugal with the two penalties. I know this is the Benfica podcast, not the Liga Nós referee podcast, but it's terrible to watch the inconsistencies among the referees in Portugal. It's embarrassing. There was a clear penalty on Samaris in the 10th, 11th minute, and that would have taken a lot of the ease off of the game if that penalty was called. Even with the VAR instituted in Portugal, I don't understand how and when they decide to go to VAR. It's a complete joke. But with each passing minute, this game was getting more tense. And I can tell you from my experience, I was not a pleasant person to be around watching that game.
I felt comfortable, and I thought everyone, players and everyone involved, looked pretty relaxed the first 20, 25 minutes. And after that, you could start feeling the anxiety and things just changing a bit. I thought Benfica came out, started off really well. I thought they created enough chances. I thought they could have gotten on the scoreboard early. Obviously, to me, and most of you guys listening know, I'm going to call a spade. And to me, that was as clear a penalty as there is. Surprised the referee. Well, I shouldn't say I'm surprised because it is a Portuguese league after all. But was surprised that they didn't at least go to the VAR and have a look at it. I thought Samaris was absolutely tripped by João Mário right at the edge of the box. And, I mean, I think that would have alleviated things. But Benfica still played well enough after that. And then he just felt with each passing minute going into the second half and then, you know, the fans, it's just you get that uneasy feeling and you know that at any moment now you start to have that doubt in the back of your mind with the terrible refereeing in Portugal. You know, you start to question, are Tondela going to be handed a gift here? I mean, you just all of a sudden all these negative thoughts start creeping into your mind. And, it happened again this weekend, but fortunately, we're able to pull away with that. But still, the first half, I thought Benfica played really well. Going into the half, at least.
Yeah, and look, it's hard for us as somebody that watches the game on TV. Most of the games, I would say 95% of the games we watch on TV, except with the rare occasion that we get to travel and watch Benfica live. Bruno, do you think it's maybe we're still scarred from Rui Vitória's years that the game was never over with Rui Vitória and everybody expected the worst?
It could be. It could be that we're still a little scarred. But I think it does have to do a lot with, the refereeing in Portugal and just knowing that any little thing and that's it for the season. That'll be the end of the season.
Yeah.
I don't think it has anything to do with Rui Vitória at this point.
No.
Alfredo. I think it's more to do with the current situation of Portuguese football.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned before, with all the negativity surrounding it, and you as a player, you don't want to believe in it because you know that you have everything in control. If you do your job, you should be able to get the 3 points and come away with things. But as I mentioned before, all the negativity going around and a player starts creating. Rui Vitória is long gone, guys. This is now a Bruno Lage team. This is a team that's turned the page. They have not played the same quality of football that we saw when Bruno Lage first took over. And I think, look, a lot of it might have to do with the fact that Seferovic's been injured. I think now that he's back, he came in at the halftime for, who did he come
somebody.
In?
Oh, somebody.
Came in and they switched to a 4-3-3. At least I thought it was a 4-3-3 initially. Then João Félix moved to the right side. So it was back to a 4-4-2 with João Félix on the right side. But he comes in and he gives the team length. He gives the team a different dimension. He's a guy that could go get a ball, that could get to an end of a cross just on his physical and on his physical ability. And they took advantage of that. But I think you'll see Benfica picking things up now that Svetovica's back. And it's great to have Jonas healthy. It's great to have João Félix healthy. And then look, the more the merrier, because we're going to need all hands on deck here going down the end of the down the stretch here for the final seven games of the season.
Yeah. One thing, and look, I hate to get into the refereeing aspect of it and the VAR, but Portugal was one of the first countries to implement VAR, right? And at this point, that there's, what, 2 years under our belt. There's no reason why those decisions by the VAR or what the process is to go to the VAR and what the methods are and what gives a referee an inkling that he needs to go to VAR. All of that, we should have already worked through all that growth process and those pain points. My thing, and I think this is touches up all, on what Cristiano was saying before, is that the way the refereeing has been this year, which included the VAR, I think that the team is, excuse me, the team at this point is suspect of what the VAR can clarify or not, or if what the VAR can defend them or not.
See, here's the thing. Well, the thing
you, VAR, go the ahead,
VAR, Dave, is the how do I, what's the word? It's every week. You don't know what calls for a VAR intervention and what does not call for a VAR intervention. You don't know what, you know, what a certain referee, the criteria is different game to game. Right.
Yeah.
And then when you take that and you add it to, I mean, look, we're 40, right? And I mean, I know Dave and Bruno are younger, but you and I, let's just cut it at 40, right? we go way back to Portuguese, to the 80s of Portuguese football. And we know that there's always been this noise surrounding Portuguese football with suspicion and doubt. And now when you have at least the implement of VAR, you think that that's going to clean up, you know, the BS around Portuguese football. And it seems like it's adding rather than subtracting. And I think the thing that's most frustrating about it is, look, you understand that referees are human. You understand even the people looking at the VAR, they're human and they're going to make mistakes. The one thing that's frustrating is that the mistakes always seem to be going one way. It's always in favor of one particular team. And it's always like the VAR never goes wrong or never disappears or stops working, magically shuts down, you know, reboots when it's for one team. But it's always in their favor. And I think that's what everyone is frustrated about when it comes to VAR. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, and now you get to see it. The it's affecting linesmen, too. They're afraid to put the offside flag, too. They'll give it they'll let the play out and then throw up the flag 10 seconds later, which is so frustrating to watch. And I can only imagine how it is to be a player.
But I think the flag. That's a new directory, because this is the first game I've actually seen the referees go on. And there's at least three, four plays that I can remember. That they let the teams play and look, if you think it's an offside, you throw the flag. You know, don't let the play go on, because all you're doing is you're opening up a chance or a situation in which two players can collide, especially when it's one-on-one with the goalie. You never know when something like that's going to happen. You got guys sprinting to the ball. You never know when an injury may occur as a result of this. And then you look back and said, oh, it didn't count anyway. So now you put in all this effort for
it's
nothing.
It's not just the injuries, the added fatigue. I mean,
absolutely.
Sprinting. I mean, you're doing 30, 40 yard sprints when you don't have to. After a couple of those, you're going to start feeling it. And then, you know, in the later minutes of the game, the 80th minute, now when your legs start to get heavy, that's when you really start feeling those sprints. I don't understand what the hell they're thinking. And it just seems like all of a sudden, all this new, let's test all these new refereeing decision when it seems like it's a Benfica. It's just like, I don't understand, man. I don't want to sound like a crybaby, but bro, it's 40 freaking years of the same thing and the same team getting favored and being helped out. It's very frustrating to watch on a week in, week out basis. It happened again today in the Taça de Portugal game that they were up 3-0. I mean, they going into the second leg. And it just, nobody sees it. And it just makes me wonder, are people that stupid or they just don't want to see it, because there's clearly something there and again, as I stated before, and I'll say this till the cows come home, people make mistakes, but it's not a coincidence when it's saying it's favoring the same person or people over and over and over and over. That's not a coincidence. It's not a mistake, guys.
Yeah. Bruno, what's your take on the VAR ban?
I mean, I was kind of iffy about it because it makes me think of American football and, you know, stopping the play and all that. But you always have some hopes. But I don't think it's proved much in the little amount of time we've had VAR for. It definitely hasn't proved to help at all.
Yeah, but look, countries like Germany and other countries.
Italy does a tremendous job with it.
Absolutely. So this goes back.
It's implemented well.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, the referees have to be competent enough to follow the guidelines of the VAR, right? So there's five. I'm not going to bore you, but there's five situations in which you could go to the VAR. And there's a lot of countries, and I think that for the MLS also is a league that has adapted well to the VAR, and a lot of good decisions are being made. Italy, a lot of good decisions are being made. Germany, I think, is also on the VAR, and a lot of decisions are being made there. The Portuguese referees are really giving fuel to the anti-VAR guys to just get rid of this crap. We don't want VAR. It's gonna ruin the spectacle. And I get that point. But there's only so much that a human eye could see. It's only one referee. There's different angles you could see the play. So I could see how the VAR could help. But when used correctly.
I had a conversation about VAR with our good friend Hugo Ferreira and the legend Salim. If anyone played soccer, knows anything about
the legend,
yeah, knows anything about soccer in the state of New Jersey, Salim is one of the first names to pop up. And I gotta give him credit. When Hugo and I mentioned to him that Portugal was going to implement VAR, he started laughing. He said, now it's easier to fix games
and
to rig game. I said, what are you talking about? He's like, look, VAR, they're going to slow it down. Everything's going to be slow motion. You're going to see a little minor touch in that they could turn around and say, you know, it's a penalty. And if they want to turn around and say, look, it wasn't enough of a touch, they could fix games with a lot more ease. And you know, at first question, you know, they didn't like it. And he's like, look, are they going to play when the official goes to the screen and looking at that decision? Are they slowing it down, or are they actually going to play it in game speed? Because it's two different things.
Yeah.
Slowing it down, you get to see things that you don't see in games. So it's like, how do you expect the referee to call something that you can't see unless it's in slow motion? I think, and look, you brought up a lot of valid points, and we wanted to argue against it because I'm all for VAR if implemented well.
Yeah.
And I think some countries have done a phenomenal job. I just think that Portugal has not done a good job at all. I think that from the referees to the VAR officials, I think that this is these are people that have I don't know, skin in the game, or so I don't know. They just it just looks
skin
like
skin in the game, or game and money in the pockets.
They can't be that incompetent to do a job that is very clearly. I mean, a referee that one week looks at a handball and says that's not a handball. I mean, I don't even need to go to VAR because it's not a handball. And then the very next week goes to the VAR when a ball hits a player in the chest because he assumes it hits a hand. So it's like it's just very inconsistent.
Yeah.
What's happening in Portuguese football with the VAR, and then you add on all the off the field stuff. It's just rather than give it clarity in Portuguese football, I think it's brought in more noise and it's made it look even dirtier than what it was before.
No, absolutely. If you have five talking points or arguing points in these shows that we see on Mondays, and you pick the channel, and you pick the name of the show. If you had five talking points now with the VAR, now you have 10, 15 talking points now. Now you got more to talk about because the VAR is not being implemented correctly. But anyway, I didn't mean to go off on a tangent there. Just I want to rein it back into the game. So Seferovic, as Cristiano mentioned, came in for Samadis. And I thought, I don't know if I agree with this decision by Bruno Lage. I thought that at the time, Samadis was one of our best players. And I think that when he came out of the midfield, we gave Tondela a lot of time to pass the ball and to find the spaces in our midfield. And I think that just added some pressure because now we don't have, we can't get possession away from Tondela because they got the spaces. So I didn't think that was the right choice by Lage, but you know, he's the coach, and in Lage we trust.
Look, I've seen a lot of people on social media and other shows and stuff criticize Lage for doing that, and I got to be honest, I don't have a problem with it. Look, I understand that it brings in It adds to the anxiety. It adds to the nervousness of the game. But I understand Lodge 100%. You need a goal, and you need a goal ASAP, because as I mentioned when we first started talking about this game, with each passing minute, the anxiety grows, and I think he understands that. So he brought in his most attacking option on the bench rather than have him on the bench and come in, with 20 minutes to go? Why? If I'm bring him in at some point, if I don't have a goal, I might as well bring him now and try to break the deadlock. So I know a lot of people are against it, and I know it might have not helped Benfica out in the midfield, but I have absolutely no problem with Lodge doing it, because look, all hands on deck. We need a freaking goal. People would have criticized Lodge had he left Sferobik and brought him in the 70th minute. Say, but there's a little more upset. What are you doing keeping him on the bench? When you're a coach, right, you're making a decision on the spot. You can't Monday morning quarterback this and talk about it tomorrow. You have to make a decision right here and now. And that's what he did. And if it works out, he's a hero. If it doesn't work out, they're going to criticize him. But when you're a head coach and you have to make a decision on spot, you don't have the luxury of breaking it down and speaking air. What if, bro, you make a gut decision and ultimately it worked out, because a lot of people would have criticized Bruno Lage for not bringing him in earlier. The guy could come in the 48th minute and say, oh, it should have brought. There's always going to be people that are going to criticize the coach's decision. And in this instance, look, it worked out. Credit to him. Yeah, we lost some of the stability in the midfield, but we expected that to happen once you bring out a Samaris, because as you mentioned, he's a guy that fights for the ball. He helps Benfica gain possession, and he does a good job of basically keeping control of that middle right there alongside Gabriel. But I don't think it was because Samaris came out that all of a sudden Benfica started playing back. No, I think it's a totally different game, and Benfica went for the goal, and they got the goal. And credit to Bruno Lage for having the balls to make that decision, because everybody wants to pat him on the back when he goes into Istanbul with a bunch of kids. He's got big balls. Now he makes a decision. A lot of coaches don't do bringing a striker for a midfielder, center midfielder, you know, a defensive guy when it's 0-0 at home. I mean, if the guy's not going to do that at home, when is he going to do it?
Yeah, and Bruno, I think the move by Lage, and I definitely understand what Cristiano was saying, but the move by Lage, it shows tremendous confidence in his defensive abilities or in the team's defensive positioning and posture.
Bro, they're not playing Porto, bro. They're playing freaking Tondela. They're playing Tondela, bro, with three guys. I mean, look, they pose some threats. Okay, with the long ball on the counter, but it wasn't more so un jogo jogado. It was more on the long ball. Yeah, they put some combinations throughout parts of the game, but it wasn't like all of a sudden Benfica was being run over in the midfield. And what he did was, oh my God, I can't believe Bruno Lage did that. Look, we gotta be patient with the guy. As the slogan says, in Lage, we trust the guy.
Yeah,
no, and ultimately, what happened? What happened?
We won.
No, but what happened? The guy that he brought in early, right, scored the game-winning goal. But if he got the 3 points, that's all that matters.
Bruno.
I mean, one thing I do want to add is I felt like we could have taken more shots from the outside. And there weren't too many shots taken from the outside. We ended up scoring with a very nice cross from Grimaldo. And we were definitely playing a lot of through ball after he took Samaris out. And I think if we took more shots from the outside, we would have probably had more goals and more chances, and it would have broken their defense a little more.
They did a good job defending. Look, remember, these teams prep 3-5 days. I don't know when
part the bus
game. No, but not just that. I don't know when their last game was prior to playing at the Luz on Saturday, right? But they prepped and they came up and schemed to defend Jonas and defense Joao Felix and defend Benfica's attack. Looking, I'm pretty sure they go over video. All of a sudden, you inject a player of a Sferovic's caliber, which is nothing like a Jonas or a Joao Felix, and that threw them for a loop. Benfica got that cross when there was three defenders in the back line at that moment. It was the first time that they weren't set up defensively, right? And Sferovic found the back of the net, was able to get his head on. Look, angle, a header. At the end of the day, man, coaches make decisions that a lot of us don't agree. When it works out, it's fine. When they don't, sometimes they make decisions that we think is beautiful decisions, and it doesn't work out.
Yeah. Before we get to the Seferovic game goal.
If you're calling me from China, I'm not calling you back. Stop calling me.
Before we get to that Seferovic goal, though, Cristiano, for you, definitely a highlight of the season. Tarap coming in 71st minute. Came in for Pizzi.
Look, I must admit, I was like, really? Like, you're for real? Like, nah, stop playing. This is like early April Fool's. But now, yo, the credit to Trapp. And Trapp came in, and look, to his credit, within what, 30 seconds of being on field, my man comes in. Yo, and the fans, to their credit, they got to give him a standing ovation. My man, he's like, yo, I mean business. And look, and he looked like you know how to play soccer, spread the ball. You lost it one time that gave Tondela a scoring opportunity. That was the one mistake he made. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think Bruno Lage sees the quality that you have there. I mean, look, guys, I know it's easy to sit here and rag on the guy and crack on him and discredit what he's done for the last 4 years. And look, no one, including myself, will ever applaud the guy for what he's done. I think he's, you know, he wasn't a professional. I thought he should have taken things a little bit more serious. I think you have a responsibility when you sign a 5-year contract. You got to come in and you got to be a professional. You got to be in shape. And he was not. But look, at the same time, he was discarded by the coaching staff from the first minute. It was kind of like they signed them against the coaching staff's will. And as a player, there's nothing worse than that. So now Benfica makes a change in coaching, and this coach has proved, and obviously by playing Trapp, he's proved that, not just shown and talked the fine game, he's proved to everyone that if you play and you practice with the intensity I ask you, and if you play and get in shape the way I expect you, you get to the level I expect you to be, you're going to get a chance on my team, on my club. And that's exactly what Bruno Lage did. And credit to Trapp for turning on the switch, getting in shape, getting to that intensity, and getting to the side. It's not easy. It's not. We're not talking about Sunday League, guys. We're not talking about playing with your boy Solteiros against Casados.
Yuri Ribeiro quality.
Yeah, well, he got in shape and he came in, and right now he's an option. Credit to him. Credit to the coaching staff. I think everyone deserves a hand of applause for being a professional and not just killing someone and discarding a player based on stories you hear. And so, I mean, I couldn't be happier. Was I shocked? Absolutely. I thought if Benfica was winning, he would have been brought in. But he came in and he played well. He had the one mistake, as I mentioned before, a turnover. He tried to control it. He miscontrolled it. Besides that, got a yellow card. I think he was trying. It's like one of the, you know, when you got a daughter and she goes out for the first time, she tries to do everything in one night. That's what he tried. He tried to get everything out the way in one shot. But yeah.
Cristiano, those are very emotional words. You almost brought a tear in my eye.
Look, because I think I don't want to go down this path.
Do you see yourself a little bit?
I don't want to go down this path, but I kind of see, because people out, yo, if you got Xhinga, bro, it's a gift. It's a gift. And in today's world, like, you got Xhinga is like, oh, unless you're running people over 20, you know, 90 minutes a game. Like, yo, not everybody fits into that. You can't fit a square, a round peg into a square hole. Or vice versa, whatever it is.
Square hole.
Whatever. But you know what I mean.
A square peg in a round hole.
Yeah, thank you. You can't do that. And I think it's easy to criticize a guy like that. And I see myself when I was younger. I had some difficulties in coaching because I didn't track back. Like I told my coach one day. But it wasn't always
that.
You want me to score or you want me to defend? I can't do both, bro.
It wasn't always the track back. But for those guys that don't know Cristiano and –
I have
the pleasure of knowing Cristiano and from a very early age, and Cristiano was a very talented player, but he wasn't always the coach's pet. He wasn't the guy that was going to conform. He was kind of a rebel, if you will. But I think that's why Cristiano gravitates so much to Trapp, because
not just Trapp, players of his caliber, players with his style. Stop.
He sees a lot of his own demeanor in Trapp.
Gordinho, tudo.
No, not Gordinho, but you know.
My man says o pão em Portugal is great, and I agree with him.
Dave. Were you surprised at all with Trapp that he came in?
No, like we've discussed, it's good that Bruno Lage not just talks the talk, he also puts his actions to work, right? So if I take everybody else from our roster, this should be an eye-opener for Zivkovic now, because now this is two coaches that he's gone through, that he's been on the bench now, right? So whatever he's doing in the training grounds, we're not there to see, because we do see he has the talent on the pitch, but if he's not coming to practice with that same mentality, then he's going to be sitting in the stands, not on the field.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So 4 years after signing with the club, Tarap definitely makes his debut. And Cristiano, I think you remember when Tarap first joined the team, and he joined the team here in the United States in the first time that Benfica was here for the International Toronto, Champions Cup in Toronto.
PSV, Hartford against Fiorentina, and then Red Bull Arena against the Red Bulls. Yeah, I remember it vividly, man.
You remember vividly. That's a story we tell people all the time.
I'd rather not tell that story, but yeah.
Right. So anyway, let's wrap this up. So Seferovic got the goal in the 84th minute, and I think that the team did enough to win the game, Dave Seferovic, man, what a story has been so far.
What a story. This guy was not even a part of the team that was training this summer. Was washed away. They didn't want him anywhere close to the team. And now he's the leading goal scorer of the league. He's got his 16th goal of the season, 20 goals across all competition, and he's averaging a goal every 83 minutes. So going forward, though, I hope that if all three players are healthy, Seferovic, Jonas, and João Felix, I hope Bruno Lage considers going forward with Seferovic and João Felix. But no disrespect to Jonas, the guy's a legend in our club. It's his birthday week. I don't want to spoil his birthday week, but I think he's going to be more effective now coming off the bench than providing us a full 90 minutes up top with João Felix.
Yeah, look, I don't know how I feel about that, but when you got three guys for two spots, is difficult. Look, Jonas, you can't take anything away from Jonas. And I think if Jonas is at 100%, nobody could touch Jonas in this team. I mean, no one.
He showed in that one possession he had where he broke the guy three different times, puts it back on the opposite post. Obviously, look, it was a clear handball on Andre Almeida, and I'm fine with that coming back. But he showed his class. This is a guy that needs half a chance. Now, yep. Benfica hasn't necessarily been feeding him or João Felix with tons of service into the box, and it's different reasons. Obviously, Fedovic is a player that you could get a 30-yard cross into the box, whip it into the box. He's going to get to it. Jonas is not going to do that. Neither is João Felix. I understand the style of play might be a little bit different under those guys, but to discard and disrespect my man, Pistolas, the greatest player.
I'm not disrespecting. I'm not saying you.
There's plenty of other people in the world that disrespect the guy and talk him down. To disrespect the guy who's the best player in the last 40 years to play at Benfica, I think it takes a lot of balls, right? This is a guy that scored very important goals. A guy's carried us on their back. A guy that's given
that's
us,
why his back
giving
is
us,
fucked
us,
up.
That's exactly why his back is messed up. Guy who's giving us title after title, and now, like, okay, because he's not playing at the same level he once was, which was scoring 30-plus goals a year. The guy's a monku now. Let's all calm down with that. Jonas still has.
I don't know if anybody's calling him a monku, dude.
You got plenty of people, trust me, on social media talking about the guy could have left in January. I don't even know why we kept him. Come on.
So Bruno,
Dave just loves Ferovi because he got his jersey, bro. That's
I'm
it.
I'm wearing it tonight.
See? Told you.
So Bruno, 1-0, Tirado a Ferros. And this is the type of games that we could probably expect for the rest of the season. And look, I don't want to jinx anything. And I know that there's plenty of still a lot of competitions for Benfica to face. But there's a lot of teams that are still fighting for points. There's Molitas involved. There's all these things. It's expected that through the rest of the season, these are the type of games, these are the type of battles that we're going to have to fight, not only against the 11, but also against the 3 in black.
Yeah, no, I think and I hope you're wrong. And these are not the type of games that we keep seeing. As we say, jogos sofridos. I think we'll probably see a few games where we're able to see the Bruno Lage that we're used to seeing. But yes, there will be some games that are going to be like this where there's going to be Molitas involved for sure. And these guys are going to come out, our opponents are going to come out, and they're going to play like it's a Champions League final.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, like some of these teams still have some points to play for. I also think that that initial surprise factor that Bruno Lage and the quality of football that Bruno Lage brought – the dynamics of the team, the movements of the team. I think that now teams are starting to get hip to it, and they're starting to to play us better on a defensive end, right? So it's up for Benfica to turn it up another notch, to go up another gear, to get past these guys. But look, every game is going to be like that. So, you know, take your heart medication and get that blood pressure checked, because it's gonna be a fight to the finish, man.
Nail biting games,
bro. I had this conversation with Hugo earlier today, guys.
That's the second time you mentioned Hugo. Is he gonna give you money when you mention his name?
We talk a lot about Benfica. What can I say? He just calls me a lot. All the rest of you guys just ignore me.
What else is there to talk about besides Benfica, right?
As we were talking, man, and like, I don't even want to say this, but it's like I'm not worried about Benfica going down the stretch in these final seven games. I'm worried about the jogo outside the four linhas. That's what I'm worried about. I'm not worried about the club himself. I'm just worried about everything else that has to do with football, the decisions being made. I mean, if we're going to keep having these dubious, refereeing, officiating games against us, or in favor of our friends, because we know that those decisions are going to go in favor of our friends. Unfortunately, we're not going to get a call. So it's like, I feel like Benfica is going to have to play at 200% rather than 100%. Everything has to be perfect. Benfica can't just be good. Benfica has to be great.
Yeah.
Because even when Benfica scores a goal with as clean as a whistle, these referees are going to VAR. They're trying to find something there that they could call it. They're going to go back 30 minutes. They're just going to try to find something that they could call it back.
They're trying to find the Pintelio offside just to call that shit back.
So I think it's going to be a very tough time for Benfica. But look, do I believe that they could do it? Absolutely. It's seven games. None of them are walking the park, even though Feirense should be a walk in the park. I mean, these guys haven't won a game since freaking August. But we know everything and everyone is going to be against us in these games. So Benfica has to be up for the challenge, and they have to come and play their best each week.
Yeah, and speaking of challenges, next challenge is the second leg of the Portuguese Cup at the Alvalade. Benfica carries a 2-1 in favor aggregate into Estádio do Alvalade. Dave, set this game up for us, please.
Yeah, so 36 times that we've met Sporting in the Taça Portugal, we've won 16 times, drawn 2, and we've actually lost 18 times to Sporting in this competition. But the last five, it breaks down as 2 wins, 1 draw, 1 loss. But this season, we've already picked up 2 wins against them and 1 draw. So in the first leg, it was 2-1, like we've discussed, but that's very late away goal by Bruno Fernandes opens this game right up for tomorrow. So everything to play for. This is basically Sporting's only competition that they have left, or any chance of winning.
Don't say that. Fighting for third is still a competition for them. They're still fighting, for their regular customary third spot.
Sorry, I forgot Sporting was the Arsenal of Portugal here.
Arsenal's actually
true.
Sport.
That's true. Don't want to disrespect Sporting like that. Yeah, they're gonna play their heart out, because this is the only competition. We're still involved in 3 other competitions, so I want to see what Bruno Lage puts forward tomorrow.
Yeah, and Cristiano, no VAR dust for Sporting.
Nope.
Is this game Sporting season?
Oh, it is. I mean, look, first of all, every time Sporting plays Benfica, they give it their all. And now, to keep things seriously, though, this is, as Dave mentioned, this is the one competition that they're still alive in. They did win the Taça da Liga against Futebol Clube do Porto in penalties, I believe. So they have a chance to win a second cup this season. I think, look, for them, all things considered, as we mentioned on other shows here and in other podcasts, after the tumultuous offseason that they had, losing a bunch of players and then still being able to somehow winning 2 cups this season, I think it'll still be a very positive season for them. So Sporting will come in tomorrow and play and give it their all and try to somehow, some way, conquer Benfica and advance to the finals. We'll take on Futebol Clube do Porto in the Taça de Jamor, in the Taça de Portugal final.
Yeah, and Bruno, Sporting, who has been struggling with some depth and some freshness.
Ristovski was also foi convocado, but he'll also miss the game. They got
apparently,
the game
but they appealed it.
They appealed it, but I think they.
But he's going to be serving it tomorrow. I read.
He's going to be serving it, but they still call him up. Somehow.
They called 19, so maybe he'll go to the stands. Yeah. But they're hoping that the decision could be reversed.
That red card is another example of the poor refereeing in Portugal. Like, it was just a terrible weekend.
So there you go. According to Dave, Rizkovski is in the starting 11 tomorrow. Bruno, how do you feel about this game, man? I mean, 2-1, and the way Benfica has had Sporting's number this year, especially under Lage, what are your thoughts and feelings on this game?
It's definitely going to be a tough game. You know, it's against a rival, regardless of how their season is going, because when you play a rival, it's a different style of game. It's a different motivation in the game. But And you know, they also have Bruno Fernandes, which I have to admit, he's a very good player and he's very dangerous. And he's the one, if I'm not mistaken, scored the goal for them in the last match we played them for the Tasa, right?
Yep.
Well, I'm positive though, Alfredo. Sorry to cut you off.
How much gas do you think Bruno Fernandes has in the tank, Cristiano?
The guy is going to be as motivated as anybody on the field. This is an opportunity for him once again to show the world. And, you know, there's going to be a ton of scouts over there tomorrow to show everyone what kind of player he is, because I'm pretty sure he's looking for a nice hike in his salary and looking to get out of Portugal and get out of Sporting ASAP. Now, as Bruno said, I agree. Anytime a rival plays, form is thrown out the window. The one positive, though, on Benfica's side is Benfica's going through an 8-game, I believe, unbeaten streak against Sporting, which is the longest in God knows how long. They could extend it to 9, if I'm not mistaken. Dave, you have those numbers in front of you?
No.
Yeah, you're correct. You're correct on that.
Dave, I'm a machina, caras.
So I think Benfica will want to keep that going. Bruno Lage, if he gets another win tomorrow, that's more wins than I was gonna say.
Don't say it.
Then do Vitorias, but I'll leave it alone. That's
Roy.
More, that's
Roy. Roy Vitoria.
That's more Vitorias for Bruno Lage than Vitoria had. So I mean, I think he accomplished that already.
Can we call him Bruno like Vitorias? Bruno Vitorias after he beats Sporting tomorrow. Victories.
But I think it's going to be a very tough game. You know, the crowd's going to be into it. The players are going to be into it. These guys, and as Bruno mentioned before, and I was going to kindly interrupt him then when he said, look, these guys are going to act like it's a World Cup final. I was going to say anytime anyone plays Benfica in Portugal, it is like a World Cup final, because they know their mamas, their baby mamas, their grandmas, their tios, their tias.
Yeah.
Everybody's watching that game. So it's huge for these guys. And Benfica has the obligation tomorrow to go into Alvalade and come out with a positive result. Obviously lost the Taça da Liga to Porto in the semifinals. BS once again involved. And now you have to try to get to the final and get a Copa, get a Taça here, take it away from Porto.
Yeah, and Sporting is looking to get back into the Jamor, which they were there last spring. But then after that whole thing at the academy went down, nobody really thought that Sporting was going to win that match, and it turned out to be a trophy that went to Desportivo das Aves, believe it or not, a team that had never won a trophy in Portugal at a major competition. Bruno Fernandes wants to get back in there, and he says that he wants to win that game. Anyway,
Vlaco Dimos in Ferro tomorrow either. They released the rosters.
You got the rosters Monday.
Yeah. So Vlaco Dimos, Ferru, and Servi are out, and going in are Zlobin, Jardel, Zivkovic, and Fasha are also on the rosters.
Yeah. Okay. So most likely Jardel is going to get that start.
It's not most likely. I mean, it's. I think you could book
unless he plays Yuri Ribeiro at center back.
Yuri's not there. It's Vilar and Slobin. So Vlaco Dimos is not starting. It's Vilar most likely to be back in goal.
It's Vilar and Slobin?
And Slobin, yes. Yep. Vlaco Dimos. So Svilar will most likely get the starting goal.
You think?
Yeah, I know so. Oh, I mean, he's playing all the cup games. You have Almeida, Rubén Dias, Jardel,
Tarap.
Malu, and then Corchi as the one backup.
Tarap is back.
As the one backup defender on the bench. Pizzi, Samaris, Gabriel, Rafa, Zivkovic, Fessa, Jetson, Tarap. Jonas, João Félix, Ferovica, and Jota up top. Those are the 19.
Yeah.
I just want to quickly interrupt. I'm definitely excited to see Zlobin on the first team, and I can't wait to see him get some minutes on the A squad and see what he can do.
Yeah. No, look, I agree with you. There's a lot of people arguing that Zlobin at this point, he's had more competitive minutes than Svilar has had at Benfica.
Oh, yeah, because he was playing regularly on the B team, but
yeah. And actually, Svila, if you guys are not tuned into you're not hip to our new show, the new show that Cristiano and I do, which is called Time Added On. It's a show for Benfica Independent on YouTube. Five topics, 2 minutes each, and we discuss. And Svila is actually going to be one of the topics on this week's show, though. So make sure you check out our YouTube channel. Also follow us on Twitter at Time AO19. Is that right, Cristiano?
Je ne sais pas, monsieur.
We'll put links in the show notes, right? Can you put links in the show notes for this?
Absolutely. But coming up next,
Time AO19.
See, I remembered. Coming up next for Benfica is Feirense, Sunday, 5:30 local. Santa Maria da Feira will be the venue in which Benfica will be traveling to. Sold out already. Feirense is currently dead last. What else is Feirense up to this year, Dave?
Nothing good. They are currently hold a record, actually, for the most defeats, or no, most games without a win in the Liga Norte. So they're at 25 games. As Cristiano mentioned, they haven't won since August 20th. And their two victories of the season came back to back, the first two games of the season. So they haven't won since August. And they're definitely going down to second division.
This is true story. I was in Portugal in August. And when Feirense gets off to, you know, two games, two victories, I remember I was at, I remember watching the highlight show. I'm like, yeah, pa, Feirense this year, bro, they're going to be like top six, fire, top seven. Yo, they're going to be good, man. Hey, cool, kind of, you know, like I find out they haven't won a game since then. I think they need me back in Portugal.
I think they need to go back to Portugal. Yeah.
Didn't they have a private owner now? I thought I heard that someone bought the team out. And
I don't know.
I thought it was interesting to have a privately owned team in the Portuguese league, and I was interested to see how they were going to do, but it's not looking very positive.
I thought the Olhanense also had private investors in that from Asia, I believe.
And there was talk about the Tondela too, about the Chinese investors in Tondela last season. I remember reading that.
Well, the biggest thing that worries me about this game is not only the short rest, but also I hope that Benfica and I hope that Bruno Lage prepares his team well, because this is a game, and regardless of whether seven finals being what's left, these games against these last place teams that haven't won games since August is always a case for probably underestimating a team. And look, for a team like Feirense, who has been doing absolutely crap all season, to be able to get points from Benfica, this might be their highlight of the season. This might be their championship, even though they're going down to the second division. And don't forget the Maleta, very important. Cristiano, trap game?
Which one?
Feirense?
Before Frankfurt? Nah, I think Benfica, come on, contra aqueles monks. I mean, as we stated before, these guys haven't won a game since August. I mean, come on, if Benfica can't handle these guys, look, just pack it up and go home.
Yeah.
I say it all the time. Look, Benfica, with no outside interferences, right? Benfica should win all these remaining games. Benfica has the obligation to be o nosso Benfica, the Benfica we've grown accustomed to seeing throughout our young years, because then in our teen years, but and especially the Benfica and the Bruno Lage. Benfica has enough quality on this team to go out there, not even with their best performance, to still come away with the 3 points. But obviously, the thing that worries me is the outside factors. But I still think Benfica will be fine. I think Lage will do some type of squad rotation to have some guys fresh to take on Frankfurt.
Yeah, and this will be so the Feirense game will be the Benfica's second game in April. Seven games in totality that Benfica will be playing in April. What else does Benfica have on tap in April, Dave?
Yeah, so then after the Feirense game, we got Eintracht Frankfurt on the Thursday, April 11th at the Stadio de Luz, followed by Stubal on the 14th of April, also at the Stadio de Luz. Then we make a trip over to Frankfurt on Thursday, April 18th. return back home to the Estadio de Luz to play Marítimo on April 22nd. And then to wrap up the month of April, a big match up in Braga at the Pedreira, sorry, the Quarry Pedreira against Braga there.
Yeah, so after that Braga game, there'll be three games left. And admittedly, if you're looking at Benfica's schedule down the stretch, this Braga game is the game that that pops up because, yeah, Braga has been the whipping boy of all of the three team, the top three teams have been beaten up on Braga. They're bound sooner or later to get to beat somebody, one of the teams. So hopefully this is a game that needs to be marked on a calendar, and it's a very important game on the way to the title, if you will. What else we got? International Champions League. International Champions Cup. Let's say International Champions League. International Champions Cup schedule has been announced. Dave, you wanna be a doll and
talk on the Talking to the Doll podcast? Yeah, yeah, for sure. On July 20th, Benfica against Chivas Guadalajara at Levi's Stadium.
I don't think it's called Levi's. Is it still called Levi's?
Yes.
Yeah.
Levi, so all the Californians can go watch Benfica.
Shout out to Mr. Mello. He's very excited to be out there.
And then they come back to Harrison, New Jersey on July 24th against Roma at Red Bull Arena. And then they wrap up their North America or just American trip on July 28th against AC Milan at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough.
Is America so, not North America?
Yeah. Sorry, it's just America, no Canada. And once again, Toronto shafted from the...
no need for the correction.
Do they have any game? Does the ICC have any games up in Canada this this summer, Dave?
No
games for the fourth straight summer in Toronto or Canada.
I think
the ICC.
The ICC is a little bit worried that they legalized pot up in Canada. Maybe that's why.
They got shit stadiums.
If you want to get me started... We're trying to build a game here for the United 2026 World Cup here in Canada, and this is now four straight seasons that the biggest summer soccer tournament in the world is not coming to Canada. It's a damn shame. I want to blame the evil empire, and I'm not talking about the New York Yankees. I'm talking about Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. Hip-hop. They're the owners. They're the owners of the facility of BMO Field, the soccer stadium there in Toronto. They want control. They control the four sports teams, and they control the venue, and they don't control this tournament. So they're keeping the tournament outside of their venue.
Dave, those are very emotional words. You almost brought a tear to my eye.
No Benfica, no party up here, but don't worry. The party will be coming down.
Canadians, eh?
I mean, I love Toronto, love my brothers up north. We had a tremendous time in Toronto when we went off radio.
Shout out to Steve.
But they didn't represent themselves well when Benfica was there.
I think it was probably, it's the summertime. All the Portuguese are in Portugal.
11,000 people against Paris Saint-Germain.
Paris Saint-Germain.
There's 11,000 people. And so maybe the evil empire, a.k.a. not the New York Yankees, they're probably like, yo, they're and Dave, I know I was messing with you before with the correction North America, but now on a serious note, they're probably looking at it like, bro, it's not that big of a deal bringing this international tournament. We're going to have to waste money, probably lose money at the end of the day, and nobody's going to turn out. Dave, you think it has anything to do with that?
No, I don't. To be honest, this evil empire, Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment, you did hit the nail on the head there. It's all coming down to money. And if they're not making money and they don't have any control over it, that facility there that they run already has two tenants between the Toronto FC and the Toronto Argonauts, which is the Canadian Football League. And they're always concerned about the grass getting chewed up between the football players playing there. And that stadium was built as a soccer-specific stadium, the only one in Canada. But now they've put a football team in there, and it's just gone. They've torn up that grass
plenty of times.
Torn up that grass. It's a damn shame. And we're trying to build up the United 2026 World Cup. But again, no ICC this time.
How's the attendance for the Argonauts?
Phew. I think, what do we have here? We got four people on the podcast. I think we might have doubled the amount of people that go to the Argonauts.
Oh, jeez.
We hit a sour note for Dave. Dave, you shouldn't be too upset with the Evil Empire. I mean, they brought in fellow Chop John Tavares. They brought him back into your town. I mean, they're having a phenomenal season. They're one of the cup favorites, and you get to see a fellow Chop in your backyard. I mean, aren't you excited about that?
Leafs are going home in the first round. They can't get past the Boston Bruins. Raptors, wow. We all know how their playoffs story Kawhi. Breaks down.
They're losing Kawhi.
They're all losing right. Kawhi. They're losing the first round. Like I said, the Evil Empire just strikes one.
You right. got Vladimir Guerrero.
Okay. Voila.
We digress. Miners. We digress, guys.
Voila.
You got Guerrero in the minors.
Cut this mic off. Anyway, that's and on that note, I certainly feel for people in Canada. We have a lot of good friends up in Canada, as Cristiano mentioned.
Feel bad, bro. They're going to have those every cup.
And that's what I was about to mention. Not only were those people done wrong by that whole Zebu Cup with people buying tickets and hotel reservations, so on and so forth, and then they got stiffed. So But then again, nothing to do with the ICC. So anyway, but all you Canadians are welcome in the United States until Trump decides to build a wall. So in the meantime, take advantage of that and get down here.
That's
Boston is what, 3 hours from Toronto? More than that.
This 8-hour drive from Toronto.
Eight hours is nice.
How's Boston? I mean, yo.
It's 10 hours from Jersey.
No, we did it in 8 hours. 7 hours. We did it in 7 hours.
Yeah, but Boston is further east. Maybe that's why.
Yeah, that's about correct.
Yeah,
I Google mapped it. It's straight across. Where for you guys said we got to go a little bit more down. So it's still 8 hours either way for both of those trips.
Absolutely right. All right, that's all we got for this week. Next week we'll be back. We'll recap the Sporting game. We'll recap the Ferenc game, and we'll also look ahead to Benfica's first leg against Eintracht Frankfurt, however you want to say that. Bruno, any parting words? Well, let's talk a bit about your project. Do you want to just give people a brief synapse about what that's about?
Yeah. So, you know, I felt I wanted to destacar os adeptos extra do Benfica, you know, and put the spotlight a little bit on them and kind of find out why they do what they do. And because, I mean, the love for this club is just unexplainable. So I interviewed them and made a little documentary series about the fans, pretty much our fans. And I was able to interview three, I would say, pretty known fans. Mm-hmm. I interviewed Paulo Pereira, which everyone should know. He's got music.
He's the dude out with the songs. And
yeah, he's the dude with the songs.
Pro Insigne.
That's it. I interviewed Hugo Gil, who's got the website with news about Benfica, and I interviewed the infamous Obispo, who goes to the games dressed up as a priest and a very humble guy. And it was a fun project, and I think if people like it, I enjoyed doing it. I think I might interview a few more people and keep the series going.
Yeah. So where can people find that?
On YouTube. YouTube is going to be the best place to find it.
What should they put in a search box?
Search Os Diavinhos, and no relation to the fan group. I just want to state that, you know, Diavinhos, Os Diavinhos, because the Estádio da Luz is known as the Inferno, and these are the little devils at the stadium who give the extra fire during the game. And that's why I called it Os Diavinhos.
Do you think the Bispo is going to agree to the fact that he's the Bispo? He's a very Catholic man, and you're in a show called the Diavinhos? Conflict of interest, man.
Yeah. I think he took it up with the religious groups and they okayed it.
five Our Fathers and six Hail Marys, and he was good to go.
Exactly. So, Os Diavinhos on YouTube. We'll probably put links in the show notes, I think, if that's possible, Alfredo.
Yeah, we could do that.
Cool. And check it out. Let me know what you guys leave some comments. Let me know what you thought.
Yeah, for sure.
Não vejo, pá, não presta.
Yeah, definitely check that out. I mean, anything that that's Benfica, it's always easy to consume. And I could tell you that I've watched them, and they're very well done. And I think everybody will enjoy the way it's been done. So kudos to Bruno.
Thank you
for doing that.
I appreciate those words.
Don't forget to check out BenficaIndependente.com, which is a huge source for everything Benfica. Our podcast is featured on there. Also, there's Benfica FM is featured on there. There's a bunch of written text or articles, both Portuguese, German, which Marcus Oren has been an avid contributor to that. Also in French. Now there's articles in French, so you could definitely go check that out. There's no articles in English. If you are interested about writing about Benfica in English, DM me, and we'll see if we could get you featured on their website, BenficaIndependente.com, on Twitter, at SLBIndependent. We're also Facebook, Instagram, and all the other platforms. So definitely go and check those out. Cristiano is on Twitter at 10CO10. Dave, what's your Twitter, man?
At 87DO87.
Bruno has stayed away from Twitter, and I don't encourage you to go on Twitter.
Instagram. It's all about the gram.
Yeah, that's right. And he's on Instagram. Where can people follow you on Instagram?
At Bruno Amar, BRUNOAMAR.
Amar. It's like loving?
That's it.
Right. BenficaPodcast.com. At BenficaPodcast is where you can find us on Twitter. Thanks a lot, everyone. We ran a little long today, but I'm sure you'll find it worth it. Sorry about the tangents and all that. We'll be back next week. Cristiano, até amanhã, pá.
Tchau, bacalhau.
Later.